What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 163 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again by the king of the courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
What is up, sir? I'm like over here panting, just trying to get ready in time for this show.
It feels like a Monday, right?
It feels like a very much like a Monday.
Feels so much like a Monday. Nation, make your Monday a little bit better by following the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can follow the show at the Level Up Podcast. That is at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, why not give your favorite or least favorite hosts a follow? You can find Joey at Courtside King and myself at Fiasco. If you are joining here us live on Twitch, that is twitch.tv/OTN_live. Here for the live taping of the show. There are the beautiful handles below those horrific mugshots you're currently staring at. And if you're listening to the podcast later on down the road on your podcatcher of choice, they'll be in the show notes for you below. And Nation, if you are listening on a podcatcher of your choice, we would appreciate a review. Level Up Podcast is now available on Spotify, Stitcher, as well as iTunes and Google Play. Reviews do go a long way to help grow the show audience and reach new listeners. So if you do have a moment, we would appreciate you taking a small bit of time out of your day to leave us an awesome review. Nation, I'm going to be honest with you. Joey and I had a very heated conversation about which topics we want to talk about this week. I mean, it was heated. We were yelling at each other. It wasn't good. We couldn't agree on anything. So we took a page out of the FIFA 20 esports book. We battled it out rock, paper, scissors style. And Joey, some topics made it. Other topics, obviously, paper beats rock, so they didn't make it. What topics made the cut for this week on episode 163?
That is a great question, John. So there's a lot of big restructuring happening in esports right now, so we're going to hit on some of that. That includes Dota now introducing regional leagues. We talked about CSGO last week. We also have the National Hockey League Gaming World Finals with some big changes coming, too. That FIFA news, we'll hit on that, too. The Smash World Tour. This is giant for the FGC scene, especially Smash players. We'll be touching on that quite a bit. Riot's new shooter, Valorant, is now announced officially, too. It went live midnight last night as far as the website and social handles and all that stuff. So there's a lot to cover, John. A ton.
So a good chunk of those topics made the cut. A couple didn't make it because rock beats scissors. Joey, for the topics that made the cut, I feel like they're amazing. I feel like they're going to make for a great show, but I feel like we're going to need a little assistance. And of course, that assistance comes in the form of our drink of choice. So, Joey, your beverage for the 163rd time, please.
Three in a row, tic-tac-toe, John. I'm going one more Woodford Reserve here. This one does have ice, though. Usually I don't water it down, but I've noticed that it jingles a little bit on the podcast recording, so I'm taking the sacrifice for the team here. I'm going to cut the jingling out and let the ice melt in there.
It jingles on the recording?
It's like this little tiny sound. It drives me crazy.
Oh, well, what will not drive you crazy, Joey, is pulling the page out of your playbook here. Water again. Still a little dehydrated, so I'm trying to fix that problem here. Probably should cut back on all the soda I drink. That might actually help out in the long run. Joey, you have your beverage. I have my beverage as well. I don't want to waste any more time. Let's jump right into the action-packed episode of 163. Let's jump right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
Now, I do have to say one more thing, John, because he's in chat tonight. For those of you that always hear us say like a review at the top of the show, we understand that not every one of those platforms has a review feature. If it does have a review feature, it's very much appreciated. If it doesn't, you can give some love on social media. You can throw a little smiley in Discord. Everything works like that. But I know it's come up a few times, so I'm going to throw it out there. With that, John, we can head right over into those industry acquisitions and departures. Kicking things off with that big Smash tournament being announced, we do have some Smash player signings. The first one being T1 adding Escalio to their Smash roster and strengthening their NA presence at the same time. I like this move. I think Smash is one of those scenes that it feels like it just is never going to die. It's been around for so long. It continues to grow. Not only the number of players and the number of viewers, but really spectators overall, whether it be in person, whether it be online, the Smash scene just continues to find a way to keep growing, even without Nintendo putting money into it, in a sense. So I really like this move from SK, or T1 as they're now known. Not only are you getting a Smash player, but also improving your presence in the NA scene after that deal that kind of merged you a bit. Who was it, Comcast that they merged with?
I believe so.
I think it was Comcast based out of Philly as well. So now you have more of that NA presence as well. You have a few teams over here with that merger. You have a few teams in South Korea. Now you're kind of allowing for more player fluidity, really, between the regions. So I really, really like this move on multiple fronts.
Yeah, and just can you imagine this scene that is already big, that already has this groundwork, that already has the grassroots momentum behind it? Can you imagine how much bigger this scene would be if Nintendo was actually involved helping fund this scene? I mean, this thing could be absolutely massive, even bigger than it already is. But it just feels like, you know, the cult following that it has, and I say that in a very good way, is really what's holding this up. And it's absolutely amazing to see the community for Smash really staying strong throughout all the years, even with, you know, all these different competitors coming out there, all these different fighting games really trying to compete against it, and Smash holds strong. I would love to see a day when Nintendo actually goes all in this scene, because I have a feeling that Smash could be absolutely massive with Nintendo actually backing it at 100%.
Absolutely, and I hope we get to there one day. I feel like if enough players keep saying it, eventually Nintendo might buy in, eventually. It's been generations at this point, so who knows, but hopefully one day. Sticking with roster moves, John, PUBG Team Liquid has added a very good PUBG player in, I believe it's pronounced Mikey, M-X-E-Y, for those who want to try to pronounce that in Finnish. He formerly was with FaZe Clan, so he was with a very good team as far as organizations go. He has a lot of first place and second place finishes on his achievement list. I really like him as a player overall. Team Liquid has done a very good job investing into really battle royales in general, but PUBG especially, as far as PUBG Mobile goes, as far as regular PUBG, whether it be on PC or console, depending on the tournament, they've continued to invest in it over and over. I like this move from Team Liquid because you're not only bringing in a new player for a scene you're doing well in, but you're bringing in a very well-known player as that. With that move, we will slide our way over to Logitech. Logitech has joined forces with Herman Miller to work on high-performance furniture for gamers. John, you're a big Logitech fanboy over there. They make great peripherals, both mice and keyboard. I can't agree with you more on that front. They also make, webcams. They have software out there as well. So they're huge when it comes to computers. I think partnering up with Herman Miller kind of expands their market in something they do very well in, but also starting to branch out their reach even more.
You know, I love the fact that this is a topic that made the show. Because earlier today, I saw the article of the gaming bed, the bed with the desk attached to the end of it and had the keyboard there. It looked fantastic. It was a company in Japan that made it. And I kid you not, I need Logitech to do something like that here in North America, because I would never leave bed. All I need, like, you know, those beds, like the back can like raise up and it's almost like you're sitting upright in the bed. That's what you need for this gaming bed. So you sit up in the bed, the bed's up there, you know, supporting your back, so you have good posture. Good posture is always important. But then you got your battle station at the end of the bed you can just, like, slide right up into, and then boom. Game time, John, baby.
For a hospital bed?
No, like, whatever those... No, there's, like, legitimate household beds that are not hospital beds that don't make it seem like you're about to die. You can get in your house and it raises you up and you just start. You know what? Screw it. If you want a hospital bed to game in, go for it. I'm not here to judge anyone. I'm just trying to make your gaming experience more comfortable. That's all I'm trying to say.
I'm just imagining you here in this hospital bed, in a sense, getting your meals delivered. You got your PC right there. It's quite the look, if I say so myself.
All I'm saying is if I ever do get quarantined from this whole coronavirus thing going on in the world, I need my battle station at the foot of my hospital bed, and you bet your bottom dollar I'm going to be gaming and live streaming my quarantine experience. I'll change all my gaming handles to Corona Boy, and that's completely fine. I will be comfortable in my Logitech gaming bed, you know, trademark in the future, battling out on the Rift, Overwatch, maybe Riot's new first-person shooter, who knows, but I will be gaming while I have coronavirus if that ever happens. While I'm quarantined.
Wow. Well, I wish you the best of luck and hopefully a quick recovery, but maybe they'll let you take the hospital bed home with you.
Who knows?
We also have Rokat, or Rockat, however you want to pronounce it. They're partnering up with Dr. Disrespect to be his exclusive partner for PC gaming, mice, keyboards, and more. So the doctor doesn't want his gaming bed. He doesn't want his Logitech peripherals. He is going with Rokat here. It's not a bad move, John. I feel like ever since, I think the only big esport they're in, to my knowledge, was League of Legends, and they're no longer in that scene in EU. I haven't really heard much about them since.
Yeah, you know, and that's probably the biggest issue, is that they're really big in Europe. Yeah, you can still find them in North America, but they're really overshadowed by your Logitechs, by your Razer, which I don't know why it's overshadowed, by your HyperXs and all these other brands out there. I had a Rokat mouse before for gaming, and it was fantastic. It was absolutely amazing. It lasted a while. I just wanted to upgrade, and I ended up switching over to a Logitech. Their products aren't bad, and I feel like teaming up with Dr. Disrespect, someone who has an amazing personality and this online persona that attracts a lot of viewers. I mean, you can dog him for what games he plays. Is he good? Is he not good at it? Who cares? The whole thing is he's providing that entertainment, and he's gone above and beyond what a lot of people on Twitch do. So with Rokat teaming up with him, I mean, that's almost a no-brainer. He's one of the highest viewed streamers on Twitch right now. It's almost a no-brainer move here for Rokat partnering up with Dr. Disrespect. They're going to get the exposure they need, and who knows? Maybe they might be able to make a push into a major esport title again, maybe this time in North America, try to get more exposure. I like this move for both parties involved.
Yeah, speaking of exposure, does Rokat have webcams as well for Dr. Disrespect to take into the bathroom?
Jeez. You know, he made... So I feel like we need to clarify what happened there. He was at a convention. I'm blanking on which one it was. But he was doing an IRL stream, and he walked into the bathroom. Obviously, a massive breach of Twitch TOS and also of that convention. So he was kicked out of the convention, and he was banned on Twitch for a little bit. Rightfully so. Like, that's like a no-brainer. Like, you can push the envelope, but that's like a little too far. But to my knowledge, I do not think Rokat makes webcams, let alone portable webcams for your mobile device.
Wow, I'm glad I got a serious answer at the end.
Yeah, you're well. I had to clarify that. Joey, normally I'm the one that makes the edgy comments. I'm not used to this. I don't like playing the adult on this show. I need you to play the adult.
I mean, you just led right into that. You gave me the word, and I just had to go with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a good move for Dr. Disrespect. I think it's a good move for Rokat as well. I mean, like you said, they're mostly known in EU right now. Dr. Disrespect being well known throughout the world, really, as a streamer. So I think this is a good way to help them expand their brand without having to spend as much money as they might have to with something like an esports brand that did not work out for them in the past. On the opposite side, we have Dr. Lupo also partnering up with Intel. So that's another big streamer move. We're not going to hit on that one too much, but a lot of these moves being made with streamers and different companies out there. And I think this is just the beginning, John. We've seen it before, especially in the peripheral area. I think energy drinks is another one we've seen a ton, webcams and chairs. So other than those, I think we're starting to see more of a really product expansion in this space where people are starting to do like snacks and starting to do like other things that are not necessarily computer based. So I think as this continues on, we're going to see more and more streamers signed to deals like this and other products trying to jump in as well. Over to a little bit more hefty esport news here. We have Dota introducing regional leagues. This is giant, John. This is Dota saying, hey, League of Legends, we see you. And we don't care. We're going to keep doing our thing. We're going to defend these ancient towers. We're going to continue to expand outward. And we're going to try fresh ideas. And this is great for Valve because they've kind of been a little bit stagnant here and there with some of their games recently. The player base is great, but Valve continuing to, let's say, put new content toward their player base has been a bit more stale in certain games. So after TI10, which is their giant international tournament happening in August, Valve will create a new esports structure for Dota 2 that will introduce 6 regional leagues with 16 teams in each. Each league will have 3 seasons with a prize pool of $280,000 for each season. And that is not a total prize pool, John. That is per league a $280,000 prize pool. So we're talking lots of money here. This does not include the TI prize pool either. So you know that prize pool that pulls in like $37 million or whatever it pulls in? That's not included in this total. Leagues will be in Europe, China, Southeast Asia, South America, North America, and CIS as the regions. I absolutely love this, Sean. I think if you're Dota right now, everyone else is going to franchising. CSGO is going to have 2 franchise leagues. League of Legends has, it's at least 2. They're moving Brazil, so 3. I have a feeling South Korea and China are probably not far behind if they're not already there. So Riot's about to have 5 leagues, probably franchise. Dota, how are you going to keep up? Well, we're not going to franchise exactly, but we're going to move to this tournament structure that allows for more stability, and that's going to allow for more organizations to put more money into their players, knowing that the league itself is going to be stable, and increasing the prize pool never hurts either. I think this is a really, really smart move from Dota.
Yeah, so looking at Dota's website here, I've seen how they're splitting this up with upper and lower division. It's really smart that, you know, the different times they have listed out here for when these divisions will play and be streamed. My only concern, and again, this is just a byproduct of the fact that Los Angeles is the esports hub in North America, is that all of their upper and lower division matches are going to be taking place at 6 p.m. West Coast time, Pacific time. You know, that's an issue. Like, for East Coast fans, that's a 9 p.m. start. And, you know, if this is anything like League of Legends and your games go 30 to 45 minutes each and you have five matches, you're well into 1, 2 a.m. Eastern time. You know, it's rough for the East Coast fans to really tune in and enjoy Dota by starting it that late, you know, for these matches. Now, yes, I mean, obviously you're going to have VODs, but who likes watching VODs when, you know, everyone's on social media, you're going to get the results, you know, before you probably watch the VOD, unless you find some way to unplug from the internet. But that's really my only big concern here, is that these start times for North America is super late for the East Coast. Maybe I'll be wrong here, but that's just a common theme I've been seeing, where the East Coast kind of gets pushed back to a really late start. And this is Monday through Friday. You know, I'm not complaining about Saturday or Sundays, but Monday through Friday, I mean, we're talking Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, alternating upper and lower divisions, starting at 6 p.m. That's going to be rough for a lot of people on the East Coast.
Right. Yeah. 6 p.m. and then a 9 p.m. match as well. So, yeah, it's a little deep going there. The lower division being a bit different time, but for the most part, at least for NA, it looks like it's pretty similar. So that could be a big issue, and I think you bring up a great point there. At the same point, when we're looking at peak Dota, I don't know if that many people are looking at NA as a region right now. Like, with League of Legends, you can say the same thing with the LCS, but at the same point, there's a huge following for teams like Team Liquid, Cloud9, that TSM team out there. Now, with Dota, I feel like a lot of the big teams are Chinese-based or South Asian-based, or Southeast Asian-based, excuse me. So for the most part, you're going to bring in some of that viewership, and some people are going to be loyal to their region. But with Dota, at least from my knowledge, it seems like more people are willing to branch out, look more into those Asian teams, look a bit more into those European teams. So I think over time, with this being the first thing, and it's still not even starting until after the international, so we have like 4 or 5 months before this even comes to fruition. Things could definitely change. They could hit feedback from the community. The NA community could be like, hey, that's great and all, but we're not going to watch that on the East Coast because it's way too late. And maybe they end up adjusting the schedule based on that. Again, Valve doesn't necessarily have the best track record for listening to the community. It seems like that's improved a little bit over these past 6 months or so. But at least for now, these times are a little rough for East Coast and even Central time. Anything else on Dota? I love this idea, John. I think moving to this structure is probably going to be the best thing for them, at least to compete with some of these other big esport titles like CSGO, League of Legends, and all of those out there. I think this is a new, fresh idea to really re-enliven the scene, as well as allow organizations to feel that, I guess, really safeness, like the ability to feel like they can put their funds into this scene more without having to worry about it dying in years to come.
Yeah, I like the move. I think it's smart. You know, obviously they're still going to keep the TI and other major tournaments as well, but moving to more of a season regional based move here for Dota, I think is incredibly smart. It's going to give fans what they want. That's going to be more Dota. I think it's incredibly smart. And it's going to bring more esport content into the universe. And I love it. I think it's great.
Absolutely. From there, let's move to a little thin ice here. The National Hockey League Gaming World Finals. John, there are some big changes happening here as well. We've seen some sport-based titles continue to invest in their scene and continue to strengthen the scene around it and those players that play in it. One of the big ones here obviously being the National Hockey League's finals at the end of the year here. They have increased their prize pool to over $150,000, $60,000 of that going to first place. That is a hefty check to bring home. I love prize pool increases. That's going to help bring up really attention from spectators as well as players for the scene, because as that number goes up, and we saw it with Fortnite, once you put a huge price tag on it, people are much more willing to read articles on it, start looking into it. What is this Fortnite game? And I think it's the same thing here. But on top of that, you're going to bring in some of that NHL hockey audience as well that watches on TV. The increased number of finalists is also a big move here. Top three from the USA, Canada, and EU will fly out to Vegas. This is not three total. This is nine, so three for each of those regions, which is another expansion going on there. Again, I like it. More Chell action is great. That allows more people to invest in the scene, more high-level matches to be played. I think it's a win-win for the players, for the spectators, for everyone else involved. And then on top of that, we do see the format changing to a best-of-three single elimination through the online qualifiers as well. So again, more matches I think is a great win here. Overall, the Chell community is very vibrant. They have a ton of energy behind them. I think giving them a bigger prize pool, giving them more matches, and giving them more participants in the final is a big, big, great move for this hockey scene.
Yeah, and the GWC is a ones tournament. You know, it's that traditional 1v1. And $60,000 for one person, that is a hefty payday. That's more than most average Americans take home in one single year, the average being right around $50,000. And you get that from getting to play Chell. You know, the community is great. The game is great. It's fast-paced. If you don't know hockey, it's still easy to watch. It's still easy to follow along. And I think it's absolutely great that the GWC is going this direction. And I love the new format change. Best of three single elimination through the online qualifiers. I think that's great. It gives, you know, more games. It allows more people to get involved as well. Top three from the U.S., Canada, and EU. You know, probably one of the biggest issues that we see in the Chell community is the lack of EU participation in a lot of these North American-based tournaments. And obviously, there's financial reasons behind that. It's just very difficult to fly people in from EU versus Wyoming or California or Alaska, to your, domestic tournaments. So it's always great that the GWC includes EU in that as well. Yeah, so it's an opportunity for EU players to get more North American exposure as well. So overall, I'm really excited for most of these changes for the GWC. I can't wait for it. I believe it's being held at the Luxor on the Strip in Las Vegas, which is even better. The esports center down there. I want to say it's bought out by HyperX now. It's the HyperX Esports Center, something like that. But it's absolutely fantastic, great venue, and I can't wait for the GWC coming up.
So now, John, this is a huge one tournament in Chell, but that's not the only type of format out there. We also have sixes, and you and I had the pleasure to cast a sixes tournament this past weekend. Give us a little lowdown on it.
Yeah, it was absolutely great. The Washington Capitals, the first ever NHL organization to host a 6v6 LAN competition. Last year, they dove into esports, the Washington Capitals, that is, with the Caps Esports Face-Off with a lot of participants. That was opened up to EU residents as well. The finals was between Eki, who was GWC winner that year, and Regs. Regs ended up taking home the $5,000 last year. Well, they had such a great turnout and response from the Chell community that this year the Caps launched their own esport gaming initiative called Caps Gaming, and they announced a 6v6 tournament, the Caps Gaming Showcase, held live at Capital One Arena. Yes, the same place where the 2018 Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals play. And Joey, it was fantastic. We had four teams fly in. Hidden Potential took on Phantoms in the first semifinals. It was a best of three matchup. Hidden Potential took that in a 2-0 sweep of Phantoms. And then the second semifinal matchup was between Entourage and Resilience, which was also 2-0 in favor of Entourage. There was a third place match that occurred between Phantoms and Resilience. It was more goofing around than anything else. But Resilience did take home the massive win. I believe it was like 6-0 or 7-0 over Phantoms. It was pretty dominant, but at the same time, everyone was just having fun. Unfortunately, there was no money for third place. All the money was between first and second place, a $15,000 prize pool, $10,000 to the first place team, $5,000 to the second place team. And Joey, in a thrilling best of five for the finals, yes, it was still a sweep. Everything but game two, which was a massive shutout for Entourage. Games one and games three were absolutely exciting, tight, and just action-packed. Game three, the final deciding game, went to overtime with 4.5 minutes left. Entourage, on a beautiful near-post shot, takes the championship, takes home $10,000. Just being able to watch the excitement on Entourage's faces when they realized, OMG, we just won $10,000. Like, you could see the excitement, not just on their faces, but everyone who was there. It was such an amazing experience. A lot of these guys have never met in person before. They all met in person for the very first time for 99% of them in D.C. For most of them, it was their first time in Washington, D.C. So it was a lot of firsts. A lot of people had a lot of fun. But Joey, the big story real quick. Regs returned to Washington, D.C. as a D-man for Entourage. Now, the Chell community has this idea that ones players can't play sixes because, you know, when you play by yourself, you realize who you're passing to and you can set up for one-timers or quick passes or skill moves or whatever you need to do. Sixes, when you pass the puck, it's out of your hands. It's total communication, total team chemistry, plays, understanding your team and them understanding you. And Regs was able to make that transition onto Entourage and played out of his mind through the eight-week regular season into the playoffs and eventually now a back-to-back Washington, D.C. Caps gaming champion. His prize pool, all prize money included just in D.C., $15,000 between two events. That's pretty good for Regs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not bad at all. And you hit on a lot of the things, but one other thing I want to say is just the really the creativity they took with some of the production. For sixes, there's tournaments out there, but for someone that's hosted by the NHL and the Capitals here, I think they did a really good job with the camera angle they chose to use as well. The fact that they used a wide lens camera and they were able to capture all six players of each team, I think that was something really cool that you really don't see in a lot of these big 5 and 6 team competitions. It's usually one player at a time in a little box somewhere, but they ended up taking that full widescreen shot and you could see all the players' reactions at once. And when you're getting these crazy goals being scored or these amazing stops from goalies like Scheckle, it's really cool to see the whole team react or in those really tense moments, watching how they clamor up and how quiet they get or when they start yelling back and forth with one another. So it's one of those things we see a bit in the NBA 2K League as well, as far as just that fun interaction between the players. And I love the fact that the Capitals were able to capitalize on that as well. Over to a not-so-popular sport league at the moment when it comes to esports. That is FIFA, actually the most popular sport title out there, but the esports scene has taken a few hits here and there in FIFA 20's FCC qualifiers recently. And this is an EA-licensed event, by the way, John. Pros had to play a game of rock, paper, scissors to decide who would move on due to being unable to invite each other to the match. What a way to play FIFA. I mean, I've heard of changing up your formation. I've heard of changing your tactics here and there, maybe making a sub or two, a power sub, you could say. But coming out here onto the virtual pitch, not even making it to the virtual pitch, standing in the tunnel, shaking your hand a few times and throwing out rock, paper, scissors to decide the match. This to me is a big, big no-no for a professional esport league.
You know, especially when the issue was in the game, was in the internet connection for not being able to invite each other to the match, that is a server error. That is out of the control of the players. It's not the players blocked each other. It's not the players didn't want to play each other. That was EA servers or whoever servers, the host of the tournament, not being able to make that connection. So instead of having the best skilled players advance, you now have the biggest luck draw ever based upon rock, paper, scissors. That's not, you know, who you packed for your ultimate team. That's not your formation, your chemistry level. That's not anything that you put time and effort into. That is literally, what are my percentages if I throw out paper right now that I win? Or what are my percentages if I throw out rock right now? That is absolutely stupid. It is a joke. It makes FIFA look, you know, FIFA's massive all around the world. The FIFA esports scene is still trying to grow in the U.S. This is not going to help you. This, in fact, is ticking a lot of people off. And Joey, when we heard about this yesterday, when it happened, we couldn't believe it. Like, we were absolutely shocked that anyone in their right mind hosting an esport event would do this. I couldn't believe it. It's an absolute joke, and they deserve all the criticism that they are getting from the community, from the players, from commentators, from everyone. Absolutely atrocious to do your players like this.
I mean, not only your players, but I think your spectators as well, any league combatants in general. Like, it's just, when it comes to esports, you want a fair competition. You don't want people cheating in any way. You don't want the league having issues as far as servers go. You want it to be a clean competition, a very competitive event for all the players, all the spectators to enjoy, the league in and of itself for sponsors. Like, okay, what happened to these guys' sponsors? So they're just now apparently not on stream because they're busy playing rock, paper, scissors. Like, I mean, there's just so many levels to this. If you really peel it back, all the different layers of this real onion, in a sense, it smells like an onion. It's just, it's really sad the way this has come. And I really hope EA really focuses on getting these servers back online, because it's not just been an issue this week. It's been an issue for many, many weeks. And it's been not only the pro scene, but also the actual players themselves. The majority of players that play this game that are not at that pro scene level, but are just trying to play some Ultimate Team or just trying to play some pro clubs. There's just been a lot of server issues so far with this FIFA title. I hope they get it together. I mean, we played Volta this past weekend and it was tons of fun. But again, that was on LAN. That was in person. When you throw it online, there's more lag. There's more issues. So come on, EA. We know you can do great things. We've seen it before. We know you're going to sell us a FIFA every single year. But hey, at least sell us one that works. The Smash World Tour is a tournament series for both Ultimate and Melee. John, unfortunately, this is not a Nintendo-sponsored tournament. They might be a backer here or there in the future, but for now, I believe this is actually led by the guys up at Xanadu in Maryland. So huge shout-out to them and a lot of the local Smash players, because the Smash scene here is amazing. I mean, you have Smash tournaments at the Cave, at Tech Time, at the Game Gym, at Xanadu, and so on and so forth. There are so many Smash tournaments in the area and so many big-name Smash Tour pros as well. So I love the fact we now have the Smash World Tour. It reminds me a lot of Hearthstone. Not the game itself, but the way the tour is led. So depending on what tournament you... I'm trying to think. So different tournaments are weighted differently. So if it's a big, big tournament, you're going to get more points for your tournament circuit for that tournament. If it's a smaller tournament, but it still hits some of the thresholds, you'll get some lower level points. I believe they're done by like medals, so like gold, silver, bronze, as far as the level of tournament itself. You guys can check this all out, by the way, at smashworldtour.com. So tons and tons of different details out there. They did a really good job with the website, a really good job breaking down all the details as far as how Smash points can be circulated. But overall, I really like this. It's going to include over 25 community events from around the world. It's going to combine a or have a combined really prize pool of $250,000 to start. So that could easily get bigger depending on crowdfunding, depending on some of the other tournaments that might be added to the circuit. But overall, at least right now, we're looking at $250,000 plus for that prize pool. And then again, at least 25 events. So the Smash World Tour 2020 is starting to look very nice, John, and it finally gives Smash players that scene or that circuit that they've always wanted. So yeah, there were tournaments out there. Yes, there were tons of fun ways to win, but there was never like a conglomeration of who is the real best Smash player in the world outside of how many tournaments did you win this year. Now you have a way to get those circuit points. Now you have a way to prove yourself, and there's a lot more prize pool money on the table as well. I really, really like this move for an awesome scene. Will you be smashing it up for the World Tour?
No, I'm terrible at Smash. There's no way I'm playing it.
Well, John, maybe you can go play some Plague Inc., but not over in China because it's been removed from all app stores. This, to me, is a little late, John.
It's a little ironic, too.
Yeah, supposedly this game just, it was always very popular, but it got a ton more downloads once the coronavirus thing broke out. Because now you have everyone deciding, like, well, how is this virus transmitted? How are different ways that viruses can be transmitted? Through bugs or rats or air or all these different things. And people are trying to see how quickly they can infect the world, which, yeah, as a game, it's interesting, it's unique. But as the world's actually being infected, it gets a little questionable. So I usually don't praise China for a lot of the things they take down here and there. But this is one that I think I can agree with.
Are we considering this damage control? Are we considering... You know, look, there are plenty of games like Plague Inc. out there. It's not a unique title. Just happens to be one of the better versions of a virus spreading game, period. You know, I think this is, I understand why they made this move. I think it's a little silly. It's a game. It doesn't reflect real life. But when your number one named virus of choice based upon users is coronavirus or Wuhan virus or anything in relations to the current coronavirus issue going on in the world, I can see how that would draw negative feedback to your country where, unfortunately, the virus originated from. So I guess I can understand it, but I do find it a little silly at the same time, being that it's a game. I mean, it's the same mentality that, oh, video games causes violence, so we should get rid of violent video games. Like, are you trying to get rid of a plague spreading video game to not spread plague? Like, to me, it just seems weird.
Yeah, I think there's two different reasons to do it, in all honesty. One of those being the fact that so many people over in China are dying by this disease. So part of that is just, in a sense, mitigating that, just because it could be more emotional for some people than others. I think the other thing is to reduce fear. If you have tons of these people playing video games over there, and we've seen it before with mobile games, there's now tons of people over the age of 60 playing them. There's much, much older audiences as well as younger audiences playing mobile games. So if someone downloads this or sees it as the top in the App Store and they notice the top virus is coronavirus, it might start spreading a bit more fear here and there. So I think that could be another reason we see it removed. Do I think it has a giant effect? Probably not. At the same point, I'm not going to say I respect the decision, but I understand the decision. Sticking with China, the LPL is set to return to action on March 9th. They will not be playing Plague Inc. They will be playing League of Legends. It's nice to see them back in action. I mean, China, if you look at the Chinese scene in general, I mean, you have FunPlus Phoenix are the world champions from this past year. Before that, Invictus Gaming, our last two world champions in League of Legends have come from the Chinese region. And now they're getting off to a bit of a slower start this year. To my knowledge, they could still do scrims. They could still play solo queue. I don't think any of that has been stopped. But as far as actually playing teams on stage, they haven't had this experience. So for the rest of the world, for those of us here in NA and EU or wherever, now there might be a little bit of an edge or at least a leading start for you guys to get on China before we get to Worlds this upcoming year. But it does look like that action will resume. Uzi will go back to clicking models and killing them very quickly and doing a very good job of it. But the Chinese region in general is back. I think we're going to start seeing more of these esport leagues continue on in China. The Overwatch League did extend their delays, so they will not be starting as soon as League of Legends is here. But I think this is promising news to see some of these leagues start to come back together. Nothing else on the Chinese LPL scene? Okay, you got to talk on this one because I am freaking hyped. So let's talk Riot's 5v5 shooter, and that is... okay, so how are we going to pronounce this? I believe it's Valorant.
I'm going to let you die on that sword. That's fine.
Yeah, for those podcast listeners, he just smiled at me. I believe it's Valorant. So we're going to go with Valorant. We can call it Project A, Project Ares, whatever you want. It has officially gotten announced, I believe, at midnight last night. The social media accounts went live. The website went live. For those interested, that is playvalorant.com. It's pretty much going to be a cross between CSGO, and then some will argue Rainbow Six Siege. Some will argue Overwatch. Personally, I think it's like 70 or 80% CSGO and maybe 20% the other two. I would go with Rainbow Six probably over Overwatch just because of the way the clash system is based on more like an operator style than a hero style. I really like the look of this game, John. I've enjoyed CSGO a bit. I've never played competitively. The scene itself as an esport continues to grow and it's fun to watch. Overall, I think this has that same potential, but again, you're adding abilities in. And abilities can be a little broken here and there. We've seen it in Overwatch. We've seen a whole scene change because of them. And there are some questionable abilities. There is a Resurrect in here. Again, not like a game-wide Resurrect, but it can be used in one round. That's a big changer. There's the ability to pretty much wallbang with X-ray vision. That's a questionable move. We've seen it in a few games, and something competitive, it starts to get a little questionable. So there are a few, I would say, question marks out there for players, out there for spectators. I think we'll see those answered as we go on. But at least for now, John, just before we go into more details, your thought between a cross of like CSGO and Overwatch or Rainbow Six Siege?
No, I completely agree. I think the only thing for Overwatch in the comparison is maybe just the style. The current graphics are very cartoony, kind of like what you see in Overwatch as well. Now, again, look, I get it. I spend a lot of time on social media. I would like for everyone to calm down and breathe. This game is still in alpha development, okay? You are seeing very early renderings of this game. Games released in alpha usually change graphically by the time beta comes around and the full game comes around. Now, with that being said, the graphics still aren't that bad for the alpha release from what we've seen so far. People freaking out about, oh, these graphics are subpar. This game doesn't look as good. I hope Riot knows what they're doing. Guys, calm down. It's fine. It's a very, very finite base of people doing that. But overall, just it's not even worth to argue about graphics in a game that's still in development, especially in the alpha phase. I mean, please go back and take a look at what League of Legends looked like when they were originally pitching it to investors. The game looked absolutely nothing like what the launch model of the game was, nor present day model. They develop. It's fine. Just relax. Don't freak out. But I do like the comparison CSGO, Rainbow Six, and Overwatch. I do agree. I would probably argue the 80-20 side of it a little bit more with the siege operators for Rainbow Six and just the cartoony and power elements being thrown in there for Overwatch. But I'm excited for it. I think this could really help the FPS market a little bit more. Now, I know people are going to say the FPS market is a little saturated. I get it. But outside of CSGO, you know, it's kind of plateaued off a little bit. Hopefully, this new title from Riot will help boost FPS overall, CSGO and Rainbow Six and Overwatch, to a higher level of not just like competition, but for content as well.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I really like the graphics, actually. I'm kind of a fan of them. I think, if anything, I would change the ability graphics. Some of the abilities, like the walls, look a little messy. Maybe sharpen those up a bit. But the actual character models, the map, the guns don't look that bad. And one of the reasons we do see the graphics, let's say, a little bit more watered down is because they want it to run on everything. It's like League of Legends. They really could care less if it's the sharpest looking game out there. They're not trying to build some Crytek style game. They're trying to build something that everyone can play if they have that particular platform, which in this case, I believe will be PC only, at least for the launch. So they want you to be able to run it on a PC, even if your graphics card is 10 years old. They want you to be able to play it. They want you to engage in it. They want you to get addicted to it, just like so many millions of players have for League of Legends. That's the model Riot runs with. That's the model that has worked for them for at least a decade at this point, so they might as well continue working with it because it seems to work so far. A few other things, John, with this. You will not be able to change characters during a match. This is very big. I mean, when you look at Overwatch, that is one of the biggest points it brings to the table, is that you can change characters depending on the situation you are in, depending on the place on the map you're in, depending on if your ultimate is charged. Maybe you want something with a different ultimate for a different situation. So there's a lot of character changing that goes on in Overwatch. The fact that they chose the route where there are heroes, but there's no changing mid-match, that is big. And one of the biggest reasons is because, like CSGO, it has attack and defending rounds. So if John wants to go a defensive character and they do really bad defending, now John's stuck with that defensive character for all the attack rounds as well. So you kind of have to play it off, balance your team with that in mind at the beginning. I think that's huge.
It adds another element of strategy. You know, it's not Overwatch where it's like, okay, cool, if this strategy isn't working, let's change our comp and then go from there. Because now the issue you have with Overwatch is everything's become too predictable. Everything's become too stagnant. So what does Overwatch do then? They institute a hero pool. And I won't go into it whether it's the right move or not. But the problem is it opens up for high levels of debate overall. And I like this move because it kind of avoids that. It's, hey, look, you need to come up with a strategy kind of like you have in League of Legends. You know, if you're going to be, you know, aggressive, okay, cool, that's great. You can be aggressive, but normally your more aggressive players are a little bit more squishy. You're going to give up your survivability in large team fights for the high damage output, so positioning comes as a huge thing you have to focus on. Your abilities, when you're going to use them, your cooldowns, your items, you know, these are things that you have to take into account. Or you build a fairly neutral 50-50 defense and offense, and you slug it out, you know, and you maybe have a longer game, but you slug it out and have a higher percentage chance of winning. Those are things you have to make a decision as a team, and it makes sense to do it that way. I like this move by Riot to implement the, once you pick the character, that is what you're stuck with. So you better have a strategy, you know, for the character you have picked, and an overall team strategy on how you're going to do this, both on offense and defense.
Right, and that's going to be one of those things, and you're still going to get people who insta-lock a character, and that's going to happen, and characters can be played on either side. So let's say like a smoke grenade, for example. Obviously, that's going to be a little bit better for the attacking side. It's going to allow them to disguise their movement and make more movement changes based on the site they're moving to. Now, on the opposite side, on defense, you can't use a smoke grenade as well because you're more planted. You can still get creative, though. Maybe you push forward for a middle choke point and use that smoke aggressively. Like, there are different ways to utilize characters, and I think that's where the teams and players themselves are going to have to get creative, like John said. And I think it adds another layer to it that we don't really see in CSGO or Overwatch because of this set character model. Now, a few other things. Guns, armor, and abilities will be purchased each round. So your character, regardless of how many abilities he or she has, they have to be purchased. So you're not starting out with this Resurrect Ultimate every single time. You have to purchase these different skills, and then the ultimate abilities, actually, you have to charge up to. So John, let's say he's using a character with Resurrect, he's going to have to get kills, assist, he's going to have to plant bombs, defuse bombs, different things to start ticking up his ultimate in a sense, so then he can eventually revive a player later round in the tiebreaker round or whatever he wants to do. There's a bunch of characters that are announced. It's going to be 8, it sounds like, on launch for these 8 operators, I believe is what they're going to be called. We have Sage coming from China, Jet from Korea, Cypher from Morocco, Sova from Russia, Phoenix from UK, Brimstone from the USA, Viper from the USA, and Omen from an undisclosed location. I believe Kotaku has an article out there where they've broken down all the characters even deeper and they've announced their abilities and such. Like, there's things from firewalls to poisonous areas. It kind of reminds me of like Caustic and Apex. There's a speedster that kind of has a bit of a tracer feel to her. There's someone that shoots arrows kind of like Hanzo, at least a couple of the abilities. So there's some characters that we kind of see modeled in other games, or at least some of their abilities modeled in other games. Other characters, very unique, very different. One of them kind of has like that Halo ODST feel where he can call stuff down from the sky. We also see that a bit with Lifeline and Apex. So some creative stuff out there. I really like the ideas they're going with here. I'm a little nervous about how the abilities translate into a game like this, but I think the fact that it is built into the economy where you're going to have to end up buying your weapons, buying your armor, and buying these abilities is going to force players to make those choices. Last but not least, John, and I'm sure you're stoked about this, there will be no loot boxes. You're not going to have to buy random character skins and weapons or just the chance at 25 gold currency that you're going to have to open 500 more loot boxes to be able to buy a skin with. Now we are getting all skins purchasable. However, there are no plans for character skins at this point. So character skins are base skins, at least at this point in the stage. Again, as John said, we're still in early access. That could easily change in beta or easily change as we get closer to live. Another thing I could see them doing as they add more operators, I would not be surprised if we end up getting bans as well. Similar to League of Legends, maybe that comes in year 2 or later down the road in year 1. We'll have to wait and see. But again, no loot boxes and weapon skins will be available and purchasable, very similar to what we see in CSGO.
Yeah, and I also would imagine that as more maps come out, we'll see what they do in CSGO 2 where you can ban certain maps as well. You know, that's where that crossover is really going to come in. You know, it's a tried and true format for FPS, and it makes sense. Overwatch is a little bit more scripted where they have these set maps that you're going to play on this week. So, you know, you don't see that there, but I would imagine that's the direction they would go in. And guys, I like this. I like the cosmetic idea. It's smart. That's how Fortnite makes, you know, $300 million a month. That's how, you know, League of Legends became a $1 billion company, or Riot became a $1 billion company, is through these microtransactions. You can justify $5 here, $10 there, maybe $20 there also if you have $20 lying around. And you buy skins or skin bundles. And I would imagine sooner or later you would get character skins. And then you can buy those too. I mean, that just like you do in League of Legends. I won't talk about how much money I've spent in League of Legends over the past 10 years, but that's the thing is that's how you make money nowadays. You don't make it by selling a game. You make it by providing the game for free and the microtransactions, because people can justify $5, $10, $20 here and there. And then before you know it, they've spent $100, $200 in a year, and you've made more money than if you were to sell the game for $60. So I like this idea. I think it's great. Loot boxes suck. I don't like it. I hate it. I wish Blizzard would get rid of it. I wish other games would get rid of it. So kudos to Riot for actually listening to the gaming community and not doing loot boxes.
Last but not least, a couple other notes. So it's going to be 25 rounds. It's going to be each person lives once per round, depending on resurrect abilities and such. So there is that. There's also healing involved too. We're looking at very similar to CSGO, where it's going to be kind of attacking versus defense. One thing, at least with one of their maps, it's going to have 3 points. So not just an AB, but an AB and C, similar to like a domination meets search and destroy type of thing. It adds a whole nother layer into the game, but something to look out for. And of course, last but not least, similar to all Riot games, now with the S at the end, it is going to be free to play. The money, like John said, will be made via the cosmetics. So go ahead and keep an eye on that one. Again, the website, I believe it was playvalorant.com. They also have a Reddit, they have a Twitter, all these different things. So go ahead and check out the socials. Most of them are Play Valorant, so you can find them there. Sticking with the CSGO style, John, but actually jumping to the mother itself, CSGO, shots have been fired. CSGO has once again broken its peak concurrent players. This happened in December, I believe. They ended up breaking it, and they've broken it once again in February. They hit close to 917,000 players playing at once. We're talking almost a million players playing CSGO at once and on Steam. I mean, this is absolutely incredible to me, the fact that they're still continuing to bring in these player numbers, that they're not only bringing them in, but they're continuing to see them grow. I think part of this probably comes down to the fact that Project A was being released, and a lot of people are comparing it to CSGO. So now with Valorant from Riot, people might want to try out that CSGO style. That could be one reason we see the big jump. The other thing is their esports titles continue to grow as well. Again, we can maybe say Project Ares, Project A here a little bit contributes to that. At the same point, it's been growing December to January, January to February, and now for the grand finals at IEM Katowice this past weekend, between G2 and Navi, that match pulled in 1 million concurrent viewers. 1 million concurrent viewers. So we're almost at 1 million players and 1 million concurrent viewers. CSGO, again, one of those things that's been around for so long, but continuing to find its way to grow. Absolutely spicy. Sticking with IEM Katowice, due to the expanded threat of coronavirus, not just in the Plague Inc. app, but in actual life, we have played without a live audience. So this is big, John, and we're seeing it. Conferences are being canceled. Gaming conventions are being canceled. Esport leagues are being canceled or suspended or at least delayed. Now we have this giant event here in IEM Katowice, one of the biggest events out there. Tens of thousands of people come to this event over the course of the weekend. Now they have ended up moving it. Again, it happened. There was no live audience. The players were like, this is awkward, because it's like a dead silent arena. All they hear is the game. They don't hear any cheering, see any reactions. They're hoisting a trophy in front of no one live. So it was an awkward experience. But again, I think that's another reason we saw the peak viewership go up, because all those thousands of people that would have watched ended up tuning into the stream each of those days. On top of that, it did work. So if for some reason coronavirus continues to spread in these areas, the esports events can still take place by getting creative and doing something here like IEM Katowice did. And credit to them as well. I love the fact that IEM decided not to cancel the event because they knew fans wanted to see it, and they lost a lot of money doing it this way. But at the same point, fans were able to see the match. The players were able to compete in the match. Prizes were able to be won. Navi winning this one in particular, taking down G2. So overall, I love the fact that they went this direction. Again, I'm sure many people would have loved to see it in person, but at least we got the matches to be able to take place still.
I think it's a little crazy that it still took place in person like this. Just from a financial standpoint, I think that, like, to me, it's like, look, you're not going to have a live audience. There's no need to hold it in such a large space then. Granted, I understand it was a last-minute decision. I get it. I'm not pointing fingers. But, you know, why not save money? Why not just go to a hotel ballroom and host it? You know, something smaller. That way you still have the people on stream that they can watch, but you're not in a gigantic empty arena or center or any place. You know, I get it. It was already bought. They booked it well in advance. It's fine. I understand. But it's weird. It gives a very weird vibe. I remember when the Baltimore Orioles did it, when they locked out fans from a game during the Baltimore riots. And it was really weird watching the baseball game with nobody in attendance. The players were joking around like they were imaginary fans. And just made things really awkward. It was very, very strange. It was almost like, why even bother if no one can be there in person? Like, it was just weird. But I understand, you know, the show must go on. I get it. It's fine. But it's still weird.
It is weird. But you know what was not weird, John? That is week four of the Overwatch League, hosted by the Houston Outlaws at the Revention Music Center in Houston. Quite a few good matches in this one in particular. Did any matches stick out to you besides these 3-0 matches?
A lot of 3-0 matches. Actually, one of the ones I found interesting, Battle of the Bottom Feeders between the London Spitfire and Houston Outlaws. I went all 5 matches with London. Really starting to bounce back after picking up their first win last week against the Justice, going up against Houston. That's also kind of struggling. But overall, I mean, London played incredibly well. They went 2-0 this weekend. You know, did take 5 maps for both of their matchups, again, against Houston and Florida. But other than that, everything else was fairly predictable. I don't see anything that shocked me too much. But the really cool thing here that happened was Jake, who was a DPS player for Houston Outlaws who retired, was able to cast essentially in his adopted hometown, if you will, in Houston, which was really cool. The fans really enjoyed having him come back. It was really cool. I won't go into the pageantry that went on for Jake having his jersey retired and everything. I think that's a little weird. But I thought overall it was a really, really well done event. And really nothing too surprising other than London really bouncing back after a slow start.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest surprise of the whole event really is the Atlanta Reign falling to the Paris Eternal.
Yeah.
I mean, not only falling, but falling 3-1. Atlanta being one of those teams a lot of people put in the top three, top five at the very least. So this is an Atlanta team that comes in very strong. They added some great players. They brought up some academy players that are very talented. On paper, this team should be beating a lot of teams. I do think this might have been their debut week, though, so maybe a little bit of a shakiness coming out. They did play Toronto in the first match. They did very well there. Maybe they took Paris not quite as seriously as they needed to, but they did end up falling here, so that leaves them with a bit to prove moving forward. On to week five. We are back in Washington, D.C. Again, the Asian homestands have been canceled, at least for a few more weeks, so we're going to stick with just the North American ones, this one being hosted by our very own Washington Justice, once again at the Anthem. John, we have six exciting matches here. Give me one or two that sticks out to you the most.
that aren't the Justice, because obviously I'm biased. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Atlanta is going to need to bounce back against Boston. I think that has the potential of being an exciting matchup. Is Paris Eternal for real? They took down Atlanta Reign. Again, like you said, Joey, a team that a lot of people consider top three. They're going to be going up against the Philadelphia Fusion, a team that's really been blown it out of the water so far. That's going to be interesting to watch as well. But I want to focus a little bit more on the Justice here. They're taking on Boston and New York Excelsior. It's not exactly easy matchups for them. So we're going to be able to see how quick this Justice team is going to be able to bounce back from a disappointing homestand 2 weeks ago at the Anthem to see if they're going to be able to, bounce back and give their fans a show and hopefully pull out a W for them in person.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few matches here. The Justice, I will give you the Boston Uprising one in particular. They're both right next to each other in the standings. Both teams really with a lot still to prove so far heading into week five. I want to see the Justice jump back. I think last week, not this past week, but the one before that in Washington, I think burned them a little bit because most of the players were sick. They weren't really able to contribute at their highest level. Now that we're starting to see them recover a bit, hopefully fully recover before this next homestand, we'll see them take on Boston, the team that I think they should beat on paper, and I hope they do come through in Washington doing so. So I'm excited for that one, but also the Toronto Defiant and Florida Mayhem. Again, not the most exciting of teams, but because they're both that bad, they're both 1-3, I think it could be exciting to see who's the better of the worst teams in a sense. They're sitting kind of middle of the table. They would be bottom probably if the Asian teams were playing currently. So I want to see who is the worst team, at least out of these two for now. And there's a lot to prove, and you got to be able to beat that worst team to continue moving your way up. We saw it last season with the Washington Justice. They were not doing so well through the first few stages. They really turned it around at the end, and I think both of these teams have that same potential if they can start getting flowing a little bit earlier here in stage one.
And also the big thing to remember, this is the first week a hero pool will be introduced into pro play. So there are four bands. Yes? No? You're shaking your head no.
I think it is. I just think it's dumb.
Well, I completely agree. I thought you were telling me I was wrong, and I got nervous there for a second. But yeah, there will be a hero pool for Overwatch League for week five. Let me just pull that up real quick. I closed out of it early. So the hero pool's on rotation. So these following champions or heroes will not be available week five in Washington, D.C. McCree, Widowmaker, Reinhardt, and everyone's favorite healer that goes attack, Moira. Yeah, Joey, I'm with you. I don't like this. I think it's awful. I think you add bans to the game, but you don't add a hero pool that you, Blizzard, and Activision get to choose. I think it's awful. I don't like this, and I have a feeling it's going to backfire, and I don't like it. I just don't like it.
I mean, not to mention that half of these heroes are what half of the players made their name on.
Yeah.
There is always a main tank player, and there's 90% of the time, if not more, he's on Reinhardt. So what does that poor dude do now? He's got to switch it up and go play something else.
Orisa.
I just, this drives me crazy. This, to me, makes me think a lot of what we had last season where we got stuck in goats comp, where now these players are being forced. Yeah, they're not being stuck into a comp, but they're being pushed to players and heroes that they don't necessarily play. So, again, it's going to be, well, we signed this guy for this, but now his champion or his hero is banned. So, do we bench him? Do we end up playing him and watch him on a different hero? Like, it's just, I like the idea that it's forcing players to adapt. But also, on the team perspective and on the fan perspective, you're forcing players away from the heroes that they've made their name on. And yeah, there can be positives and negatives with it. And yes, it's going to keep the meta fresh. At the same point, like, they banned some big-name heroes for this first week. Like, McCree, Widowmaker, and Reinhardt all coming down in the first week. And then Moira, who I wish she was permabanned in-game. That one I agree with. The other three, it's like, I don't know how I feel about this. But we'll see how it goes. I'll give it a chance this first week, and hopefully things will keep being interesting, I guess. Good times ahead. Thank you, Blizzard, for that. You always keep the fun interesting. But overall, John, I like the idea of bans, and you hit on this a bit, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on it. But I think one of the reasons we don't see bans in Overwatch League is because of the smaller hero pools. Like, if we eventually get more heroes, like similar to a League of Legends, which is obviously much higher, then I think we might see some bans. Maybe it's Overwatch could do it where there's two bans per team, and maybe those bans are shared between the teams. So, like, if one team bans Widow, neither team can play Widow. I think that could be an interesting way to add bans in, and you're only taking a couple, so you still have plenty of heroes to play, but at the same point, you're pushing both teams. So instead of one saying, haha, I know you only play Reinhardt, let me just ban him. If you ban him, it ends up impacting both teams. I think that's an interesting way to really challenge the teams tactically, but also keep it interesting for spectators.
Agreed.
Moving to the LEC and LCS, we'll kick it off with the LEC. John, what do our standings look like for European League of Legends?
Whole bunch of ties because you know Europe and them ties. First place, Origin, Fnatic, and G2, three-way tie, 9-3 for first place. Misfits Gaming in fourth place, 8-4. Rogue and Mad Lion said, you know what, we're gonna tie also in fifth place, 7-5 for both of those as well. Seventh place solely belongs to Excel Esports at 6-6. SK Gaming and Schalke said, you know what? We don't want to be left alone in this whole tie thing. 2-10 for both of them. And Team Vitality, again, happy that they are franchised and there is no relegation, sitting in last place at 1-11. So, Joey, I have to ask you, your game of the week for the LEC, why does it include Team Vitality? Or not.
1, 2, 3. Okay, I got three matches of the week for you guys.
Get me.
Kicking it off, we're going to go with Origin and G2. These are two top three teams, arguably, on everyone's list since the beginning of Spring Split. Origin has come out. They've looked a little unproven at times. G2, on the other hand, was supposed to be this giant powerhouse team, and then they lost to Schalke. So they've lost a few games here and there. Caps has shown that he might be a better mid laner than he is in ADC. There's some question marks coming out about that, but overall, they've stuck to the lineup. They've started to turn things back around. They had a very dominant performance last week, and now I want to see how they perform up against the higher-ranked teams once again. And this week, they're matching up against both Origin and Fnatic, which leads me to my second game of the week. I think G2 and Fnatic is always a classic, similar to what John says over there with C9 and Team Liquid. These are two top teams. They're always top teams, it feels like. You do not want to miss this match. And last but not least, I'm going to go with Misfits and Origin. I personally have Origin as the number three ranked team right now. A number of people have Misfits out there. This is kind of the battle between third and fourth if Origin lose to G2. So is Origin going to be that third ranked team where they end up getting to have a little bit more power moving into spring playoffs? Or is Misfits going to hold on as the bunny they are and hop their way into that third seed? We'll have to wait and see. With that, over to the LCS, John. In the standings, Cloud9 sitting on first still, 11-0. FlyQuest questing their way on up and planting trees along the way at 8-4. Team Solo Mid not sitting solo in third because Team Liquid has joined them after Broxa joined them. They are at 6-6. Immortals, again, showing some blood. 5-6 currently in fifth after being high at the early part of the split. Dignitas also at 5-6. Evil Geniuses, they've been plotting for the whole split so far, and they have not gotten very far. They're sitting in 7th with the Golden Guardians and the 100 Thieves, who have not stolen enough wins because they're sitting at 5-7 as well. And last but not least, Counter Logic Gaming. Boy, has it been a bad split for them. Oof.
All I have to say is CLG beat TSM last week, which may have been one of the biggest shocks so far of this split, but kudos to CLG. CLG TSM is a classic LCS matchup, and CLG came to play. Anyone who beats TSM is good in my book. I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, John, they are playing right now, and they have the chance at beating Immortals as well. And then later tonight, we have C9 up against Dignitas. So again, C9 might not be undefeated at the end of the week. There is a lot of hope, I think. I think we both probably expect them to win. But you never know with Hooney. He's kind of a wild card, a very expensive wild card at that. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But looking forward to next week, John. We have matches on Saturday, March 7th and Sunday, March 8th, as well as Monday, March 9th with new Monday Night League. What are you looking forward to see?
You know, it's tough because, like, Cloud9 is almost must watch in the LCS right now, because can they do the Fnatic? Can they go a full split undefeated? You know, as of right now, they're completely undefeated. You know, that's no other team has done it other than Fnatic. So it'll be interesting to see if they will be able to pull that off. And they're going up against their rivals, TSM. TSM, this is their second time this split they'll be playing. It was a close game. It was a close game the first time they went around. Cloud9 ended up pulling it out. Cloud9 always somewhat struggles against TSM, so it'll be interesting to see how they do going up against their old rivals. If I had to pick one that did not involve Cloud9, I would go FlyQuest and TSM on Sunday. FlyQuest sitting in solo second place, 8-4. TSM just two games behind them. TSM really starting to pick some steam up. Again, they did falter a little bit against CLG this past week. But that's a very good close matchup that I think FlyQuest will pull the win out in. But that will definitely be one to watch as well. And then, Joey, I have to mention it because he's a dedicated viewer and listener of the show. Squirkle and his Golden Guardians are going to have a repeat match against my Cloud9 boys. I hope we don't bet anything, because when we did last year, we lost. So I'm not going to bet anything, but I believe that is going to involve a lot of trash talking in the OTN Discord server. So that one has to make my list as well.
Now, John, how would one get to the OTN Discord server?
Discord.me/OTN. Did I do that right, Joey? I did that right?
You did that right. I saw that question mark in your eyes there for a second.
I had to think about it real quick. I was like, wait a minute. Joey normally does that part of the closing. I can't remember what it is.
So a lot of fun esports to look forward to this next weekend. Obviously, League of Legends being one of the bigger ones out there. The LPL kicking back off very soon. John, I love the world of esports and gaming. And on top of that, we have a lot of big games being released this month as well. Go ahead and check those out. You can follow us on socials, and John will spiel that out a little bit when we get to this closing.
I think you do that part also.
Let's just get to the closing, sir.
Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get exclusive access to content that nobody else in the world can get unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and or Google Play. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us and the show. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, we stream regularly on Twitch. This show, Monday nights, come join us live around 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time, and that is at twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor and hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up.